tomorrow's time, peace of mind. As my life slips into yours, changing with the hours, filling up the world.
Judy Collins made her debut at age 13 with a performance of Mozart's concertos for two pianos. She's been making music ever since. As one of America's most enduring artists, she's come to be equally known for the songs she's composed and as a sensitive interpreter of other artists' work. On top of that, she's established herself as a filmmaker, business owner, painter, producer, and activist, and now her record label, Wildflower Records, has released Born to the Breed, a tribute to Judy Collins, which features a wide range of artists. Yes, the singer we're hearing right now is not Judy Collins, it's Joan Baez. Singing Since You Asked, also Dolly Parton, Leonard Cohen, many others, and they're all interpreting Judy's original compositions. Joining me now is Judy Collins. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks, Leonard. I'm so glad to see you.
You have the unique distinction of being an artist who's remembered just as much for her interpretations of other people's songs as your own. So what was it like to have the favor returned here?
Well, it's exciting having Joan Baez sing this song of mine, my first song. Was a thrill. I've recorded one of her songs, and of course she's a friend. I've known Joan for, well, going on probably 50 years. It's a long time.
You were about two at the time.
Yeah, we were children, babies. Then also Leonard did a version of Since You've Asked on this CD. That was particularly wonderful because I didn't write any songs. The first few years of making records in New York for Elektra Records, I did traditional songs, and then I recorded the songs of the city singers, Pete Seeger and Arlo Guthrie. Then I added people like Dick Farina and, of course, Leonard Cohen. And when I found and discovered Leonard Cohen in 1966, I recorded a lot of his songs, and then he said to me, "Why aren't you writing songs?" And I said, "I don't know. I never thought of it." Between Mozart and Pete Seeger, it seemed to me there was plenty of material in the world. Who needed to write songs?
Maybe you had to wait until you were ready to write songs.
Well, I suppose that's right, because once I started, I was saying last night that I was talking to some people about my writing, and I said the first song I wrote was Since You've Asked, and it took me 40 minutes, and in the subsequent years, it's taken me at times 5 years to finish a song. So I was seduced by the ease and the comfort of being able to roll it out.
Was Wildflowers your first album where you sang your own material?
Yes.
Is that why you've named your label Wildflower?
I suppose it could be, although I do like the name a lot. I've always liked the name. But yes, it makes sense. It was a strong album. It had a lot of breakthrough characteristics. In My Life was the album that preceded it, which broke all the rules for that time and who I was and what I had done. Because suddenly there was Kurt Vile, there was Bertolt Brecht, there was Leonard Cohen. Mm-hmm. And in Wildflowers...
And the Beatles.
And in Wildflowers, we, being my producer, Mark Abramson and I, we worked with Josh Rifkin, who, of course, made these extraordinary orchestrations. Had we known how revolutionary we were being, we probably would have been a little nervous. But since we didn't, we weren't.
Well, it's interesting to think about the whole process of reinterpreting somebody else's work, because often something like In My Life or anything by Leonard Cohen, the original has such a strong stamp of the artist on it that you have to find a way to make it a Judy Collins song.
You must.
And then these artists had to do the same thing with your work.
That's right. That is the requirement. And the song, I believe in the song. I am a great believer that the song carries its own value, its own aura, its own sensibility. The challenge is to put your stamp on it so that people say, ah, that's a Judy Collins song.
So is it any different than being an actor? We were talking before we went on the air about Frank Langella, who is like a chameleon. He can be any character. He becomes the person he plays, no matter who that is. When you sing the song, is it like acting?
Well, it teaches you what it's supposed to be, what it's supposed to do. And I think that's true for any actor facing a part. When I learn a song, my most... of course, my own songs, writing my songs, the same process is true. You write it, and it's very exciting or very agonizing, depending on the day and the time. And when it's done, you then have to learn it and also do the same kinds of discipline you do when you're learning a Sondheim song, a Joan Baez song, Joan Mitchell song, a song by Sondheim, by Ian and Sylvia, whoever you're interpreting, you must, including your own material, put your own stamp on it.
But you have changed, as you pointed out. You start off as a folk singer, and you're very happy to still call yourself a folk singer, even though so much of the stuff you've sung over the years has not been folk music.
What I characterize myself as is a singer of Judy Collins songs, because there are so many different kinds. And the thing that brings them together and that makes them unique is what I bring as a singer to the song, whatever category it falls in. And I don't believe much in categories, but I do believe in the transcending idea that the song will tell you what to do with it.
When you hear other people sing your song, do you get it? Is it instructive to you? Something that you have been singing for years and years, and suddenly you hear a whole different approach?
It's very exciting, because you don't know. Each singer is going to bring a different personality, a different idea. It doesn't change the sense that you have that you know the song, but it changes your idea of what's possible. Rufus Wainwright, for instance, is doing on this album Albatross, which I wrote, was one of my first songs. In fact, it was on Wildflower, on that first trio of songs that were mine.
Also take you 20 minutes to write?
No, that was a long, careful, thoughtful. I felt more like I had the Leonard Cohen muse hanging over my shoulder and demanding that I rework the word over and over and over. And hearing Rufus sing that song was amazing. He did it beautifully. When it was done, I said, "You own this song. It's yours." "Yes, I wrote it, but it's yours."
So you can never sing it again.
It's a great. No, I'll sing it, but I won't sing it like Rufus sang it, nor will I choose to do things in the way that other people did them. But it is a very revealing, interesting, exciting. I think it excites one to think about writing more songs.
Well, how did this project come about? Because it must have been a little odd asking other people to sing your songs for your record label.
Well, no, because my record label has its own mind and operates oftentimes without me. I have distributors and people who contribute to the idea factory, so to speak. So it's certainly been in the air for a long time. My songs have been known by other artists, so it wasn't much of a surprise. But it came about in a strange way, because I was out at a festival in the West, South by Southwest, I think, or maybe it was, I think it was South by Southwest, and I was doing a lecture. And Chrissy Hynde was there doing one of these lectures too, and she and I ran into each other, and she said to me, "You know, my father is on my top 10 list of songs that are my favorite songs in the world." And I said, "Well, that's interesting, because my record label wants to do a group of songs of mine, and that might be a nice way to start it out," which it was, and she recorded the song and did it beautifully.
This is actually volume one, so are there more in the can? Or?
There are. There are a lot of people who wanted to be on this label, on this album, but who were either for time conflicts or because they had other projects going on couldn't do it, who would like to do songs, so we're going to have a volume two. Also, there are lots and lots of songs that weren't got to, like The Blizzard and Open the Door and a lot of things, The Fireman Song, things that I had dreamed of certain artists singing. It's also funny, I had gotten a call from John Denver in 1989 or 90 after I wrote The Blizzard, and he said, "Would you please come west and play it for me?" It's a complicated song. And I was in bed with the flu about this time of year. I couldn't get out of bed. I was kind of shot from a year of touring and then having this flu, and I couldn't sing. So I said, I can't come. I'm so sorry. I didn't think he ever recorded it. And a few years ago, somebody from Cherry Lane Music sent me a little cassette of John Denver doing the song. Now, do you think I can find that cassette? No. I know that it's there somewhere, and maybe it'll reappear through somebody from Cherry Lane.
And you really do want to find that.
I do. I do.
Well, what's with the germ of a song? I know when I've talked to writers, short stories and novels, they'll say sometimes it's just some kind of image, or they'll hear a little scrap of dialogue, and then that'll just get them going. Is the same thing with songwriting?
Well, songwriting for me is a much more... I keep a notebook, and I also write prose and memoir and so on. So I do keep a notebook, and I keep a journal. And quite often, one of the songs on the album, which is sung by Sean Colvin, is called Secret Gardens. Secret Gardens came out of my looking through my journal and saying, what's a good starting line? Where you look for them everywhere. And I had been to my grandmother's funeral and with my mom, and in the journal I found the line, "My grandmother's house is still there, but it isn't the same." You know how when you're grown up and you go back to the place you spent time and you think everything is so small, everything is different. And that line started out the song. The song about Che Guevara, I had Che Guevara on my mind for years. I had the image of his being betrayed by people in the village where he lived, which apparently, according to certain people, was what happened. In Bolivia. And the image of how that scene would have taken place, those who betrayed him and those who adored him, some of whom betrayed him, and what that looked like in the candles and the ceremony and the Catholic burial service. That was one of the songs that took me 5 years to write.
And now there's a movie that that'll take you 5 years to watch. Judy Collins is here. The latest album from her label, Windflower Records, is called Born to the Breed, a tribute to Judy Collins. I just had to make that joke.
No, I'm glad you did.
Have you sat through it?
I'm contemplating it. It'll take me quite a number of weeks to figure out whether to go to it. That's it.
But he was a man with a cause. And in a recent New York Times article, you said that, and this is the reason I mentioned you as a folk singer, you said that you embrace the description of a folk singer because it indicates social commitment.
Absolutely.
And you really, over the years, you have been committed in one way or another to causes. You even have been a representative for UNICEF.
I have. I think it comes naturally to me. You know, I was raised in a family. My father was a performer, wonderful singer and songwriter, pianist, had a radio show for 30 years, so I grew up really in a radio station too. And always there were demands. You go to the fundraiser for the Salk vaccine. You go to the Lions Club fundraiser for the local charities. You show up and perform. And then it began to be politically oriented, to go out and march against the war, to be part of the anti-war movement, to be part of the civil rights movement. Civil rights, children's rights, women's rights. You have to be prepared.
And it's a wide-ranging thing.
It could be political.
It could be personal.
That's
because
right.
I remember in your memoir, Sanity and Grace, I think we talked about it a few years back.
Yes, we did.
Suicide prevention became a major cause for you, and that grew out of your own tragic experience.
I lost my son, as you know, to suicide 16 years ago. And because of the taboo, which being a suicide survivor... Then there are a lot of questions that come up. Society and the church and the state have inoculated us with this cloud of denial and pain and over the grief, which actually had to do with grabbing the property of the suicide and also denying the suicide rights to spiritual equality in a way. And so I saw it not only as a devastating and terrible experience, but also something that does have political overtones and social overtones that had to be faced in order for me to grow and have and to continue to have a happy life.
As I said when I introduced you, beyond the music and the books and the activism, the filmmaker as well, do you feel too constrained just doing one thing? I mean, isn't touring 50 weeks a year enough for you, Judy?
No, never enough. I just feel so privileged because I get to go and bring live music to live audiences. What a thing to be able to do. Well, to be able to go to cities, to countries, going back to England and I've been all over this past year to Korea, Taiwan.
Did they react
differently
to you?
No.
Did they know your music?
They know my music. I was overwhelmed when I went to Korea. This incredible Flower Power concert where a lot of Blood, Sweat, and Tears was there, and many, many performers who.
How many Blood, Sweat, and Tears are still alive?
It's probably just
Blood and Sweat.
And there were one or two there. When they were being put together by the great Al Kooper, I love Al Kooper. Al Kooper's a wonderful man, a wonderful musician, and I knew him well. He's not there now with the group. But anyway, the Koreans went all crazy for me. I thought, wow, where have I been all your life? All my life. We did go to, of course, it's a place where they still deal on a daily basis with this issue of the landmines and the war, the potential situation in North Korea. But they're thriving, the North Koreans. The South Koreans are wonderful
people. When do you find the time to paint?
I don't do much painting except when I'm on vacation. But I read all the time, and I go to movies, and I love to have my time at home with my new cats and my wonderful husband.
What about writing new songs?
I have been very lax. I'm writing a new book, which takes a lot of time.
We need a third album,
Jimmy. I know you do. I've been working on this new memoir of the coming up to the 50 years in the music business, and I have a lot of stories to tell. I'll probably call the book Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, because that's a title that appeals to me. And so telling the stories has come into focus for the book. But as I go along, what I've noticed with my writing is that when I'm writing prose, the engines get motivated, and then I move into the piano. I tell you something, I've cleaned my studio. That's a good start.
And you compose on the piano.
I do, and the piano's been tuned. Everything is ready for me to waltz in there and do something.
Well, we're going to go out with Dolly Parton singing one of my favorite of your songs, Fishman's Song. And it has been my great pleasure speaking with Judy Collins again. Her latest album, in which she does not appear, but I'm sure there's one that you will soon.
Oh, yes, I'm working on a new one as we speak.
But this one is called Born to the Breed, a tribute to Judy Collins, and it's from Wildflower Records. Here's Dolly Parton.
Pitching pennies in the sand beside the sea, and the sunrise hits their oilskin boots, their painted boats and me. And they seem to know the ocean like a man knows a woman. She makes him wait around for half the morning for the tide to turn. Pull on the ropes, St. Paul fisherman never catches more than he knows he can sail.